Welcome to Feels Like Healing, a series of conversations between myself, Al Lewis, and individuals who have turned to creativity as a way of helping them heal. Our need for healing is universal, however, the reasons behind it can be oh so varied. A difficult childhood, a traumatic experience, or perhaps a bereavement and our need to process grief. My search for healing stems from the death of my dad, who died when I was 21 from multiple sclerosis. I believe that hearing other people's stories can help us to process ours, and that the act of being creative can help turn something seemingly hopeless and incomprehensible into something beautiful and hopeful. These conversations are here to provide solace and inspiration, and to show you that healing can happen when we take our deepest pain and turn it into a work of art. This is Feels Like Healing. My guest this week on Feels Like Healing is Curtis Stewart. Curtis is a violinist and composer from New York City, whose career has taken him from MTV specials with Wyclef Jean to working with the New York Philharmonic, in between sold-out shows at Madison Square Garden with Stevie Wonder, Bruce Springsteen and Seal. In 2021, Stewart's album Of Power, Bright Shiny Things, was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Classical Instrumental Solo. And his latest album, Of Love, has been called a requiem of sorts, in that it is a collection of work to cherish life, time, and lifetimes, and is dedicated to his late mother, the Greek jazz violinist Electra Curtis. So as Curtis has decided to put his love for his mum into a beautiful album, I thought it'd be great to talk to him about that and the decisions behind making the album and everything in between. So, hello, Curtis. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yes, I'm doing very well. Actually, it's kind of crazy. 2 weeks ago was the 2-year anniversary of my, I hate to call it an anniversary, but it was the 2-year mark of when my mom had passed. And so I was going through various just ways of remembering her. It's funny, it never really, that sense of mourning never really hits. I tried to schedule time aside to like make sure I had time to mourn right at that time. And just tried, I was like, okay, I'm going to honor my mom. I'm going to do it. And then like, it didn't happen. And then 2 weeks later, it just like hit really hard. So that's how it works.
It is. And grief knows no time frame, does it really? It doesn't conform to what we hope for it or expect it to do. And do you find those times when your mum comes back into your head, do you find that a comfort, or is it a bit of a mixed emotions, I guess?
Well, she's kind of like always around in my head, you know, just I'm always thinking about things just because I do so much of what she did. You know, she was a violinist. I'm a violin, you know, I'm a composer just like her. You know, I try to make a similar type of music that she did. She was really interested in connecting all the musics of her culture, from Greek music to New York City, you know, avant-garde jazz to Polish themes. And so she was constantly doing that. And I'm attempting to do that same thing with my own heritage, you know, being half African-American and half Greek, Polish, all that. So, she's always there because I'm always kind of doing, I feel like I'm kind of continuing her work in a way. But I think, yes, but to speak to your actual question, I think when I get a little overwhelmed and emotional, I actually find it, I find myself grateful for those moments because, you know, I don't get to, you know, I'm on the go so much, I don't really get to really sit and feel emotion, like sit with those any emotion really for much time. And being on the run, you know, as a musician, we're just kind of hit, create, you got to keep making, make the next thing. And so when I have time and when it hits, I try to really honor that and make time. It feels like I get to reconnect with that love for her.
You alluded to it there that your mum was a musician, a jazz violinist. Your dad also, am I right in saying he was a jazz tuba player?
Yeah, we're going to do a gig. We've been playing this last year. We've been doing quite a bit of gigs. He's played with Dizzy Gillespie and Sonny Rollins and Chick Corea. He's played with McCoy Tyner. He's played with all the really great living jazz artists during his time. And he created a way of playing the tuba, which was actually an original jazz instrument. It was one, the original bass instrument in jazz until the music got faster and louder. But he created techniques on the tuba to be able to reclaim that spot as the bass. So that's mm-hmm. his kind of claim to fame in the jazz world.
And so what was it like then? I'm assuming, because sometimes I talk to people who've come to creativity late on in life, or, you know, it was perhaps not on their radar until later on in life. But it seems like for you, the violin was thrust into your hands at a very young age. Am I right?
Yeah, sure was. I did my best to try to get it out of my hands, but it kept getting thrust back in. I started playing when I was 3, and my mom was my first teacher, but I was like a horrible student. I wouldn't listen to her. But I realized that I was her student, you know, in terms of just naturally just watching her career, watching her sense of creativity. I was in her band for a second. I watched her shows. I watched her, how she would make business moves, you know, and try to collaborate with people. And she would like work with rappers and try to get them to figure out how to rap in like 7/8 time in over Greek rhythms and stuff. And wow. Constantly and using Middle Eastern modes over like jazz chord changes. And she was constantly doing that. So she was my teacher in a lot of ways. But yeah, I started when I was really young. For a second there, I was really into the clarinet. And then I was like, I got into a school for clarinet. And then my mom was like, I was like, Mom, I got into, and she's like, you're playing violin at that school.
So, no choice.
No choice, which was fine. I was actually very proud to play violin, but I don't think I really, you know how when you play an instrument and you hear the sound and you're reacting to it and you feel this love for this thing. I don't think I really started feeling that until after college, honestly. I had more of like a penchant for piano or like things with keys. I loved little buttons.
So was there ever any point in your life where you considered anything else that, other than becoming a musician, or was that always the trajectory?
I am a teacher. I was a public high school teacher for 10 years. I was teaching at a performing arts high school, so I needed to be a violinist or a musician to do that. But being a teacher, I mean, is a whole other set of skills in terms of organizing the classroom, planning, you know, psychology and understanding how to deal with groups of students as well as individuals and all that type of stuff. I got a degree in math because my dad was basically like, I'm not paying for a degree in music. Because, you know, career-wise, you don't being a musician, his thought was you don't need a degree in music in order to be a musician. Mm-hmm. You know, the degree is not, you just have to sound good. And so that you just do whatever you got to do to sound good and learn from people and take classes and stuff, which is kind of true. It is and isn't true in certain ways, I found. But I guess not. I've always kind of followed through on this path of being a musician. I mean, only recently, since I've accomplished certain things that I think that my mom would have been proud of, you know. Mm-hmm. She was constantly kicking my butt. She was constantly like, no, okay, great, but what's the next thing? Oh, that was almost first class. What's the next thing? What's the next thing? And so now that she's been passed, there's a little different, it's a little different for me figuring out moving forward. I'm still pretty driven to do that because the world around me is set up such that I have to, you know, I have to show up for things. But she was kind of a driving factor in my world. So I'm sure with years and years time, the sense of like what I end up doing might shift.
I read somewhere you said that when my violin became a vehicle for my voice and ideas, I think people started noticing. Mm. So when was that?
Yeah, I think that was around that time after college when I just allowed myself to compose on the violin. A lot of my composition happens as I record. I record it in and then I edit that and then I re-record it so that I can perfect the actual performance. But I use the violin, I use my actual voice. I've always been interested in poetry, and so I was writing a lot and I didn't know how to share that with anybody. And so I was using those compositions and recordings to share that poetry and share those words. I think my music is full of a lot of different influences, and people see it as very creative. But for me, I don't actually see it as creative at all. It's just I try to make the most meaningful thing. I'm trying to find music that really touches me and like makes me feel more expansive. And I think with the words, people have a way in to that sense of expansion, because they understand that it's not just me trying to be creative. It's about expressing myself.
At what point did you decide that you wanted to dedicate an album or a piece of work to your mum? Was it something you felt compelled to do quite soon after her passing, or was it a gradual process?
Well, the way I work, I have a whole bunch of ideas. I have like 10, five ideas for my next albums already in my brain that I'm kind of slowly accumulating various songs for, as we all, you know, we just accumulate songs and like, oh, that could fit into this one. And like, oh, this one could fit into that other album. And so I had been accumulating the idea for a bigger album actually called Of Love, Of Time, probably for the last like 5 or 10 years. Of Love was the third album. You know, the first one was Of Colors. And then after that, I was like, oh, but even more important than that is the sense of time, like the sense that the way we experience time is totally external in a way that like you have to show up to work. Time is this external thing. We are let known what time it is. You know, we don't really know. But love is this like internal clockwork that just fills us. You know, it's this thing that attaches us to the world. And so I was really interested in that duality, and I wanted a bigger album called Of Love, Of Time. But yeah, once my mom passed away, I instantly figured out I just have to do Of. Well, actually, I was still like, okay, well, Of Love is this thing that I need to dedicate to my mom. Because I was her caretaker for 4 years, and that was extremely stressful. She had brain cancer, so we were dealing with health insurance and medication and, you know, getting a hospital bed and who's going to take care of her when I'm on the road. And like, do I go on the road? And how do I feel feeling guilty about being gone? Like all these things. Yeah. And so I was writing a lot of songs. I was writing a lot of music in that period.
Does that form the backbone then of the album?
Yeah, that whole album is mostly about me being basically a caretaker going through their dream. The album isn't really a story, but if it had to be a story, it's like there's like this prayer dream world that like kind of unfolds throughout the whole album. It repeats throughout the whole album and kind of expands. And it's a caretaker trying to figure out how to deal with this world without the person that they were caring for. And that, you know, it's me. I mean, it's very much me talking to my mom, but I'm hoping that others will kind of relate to it that way. But essentially, there was so much music that over those 4 years, I mean, she did remarkably well. So for somebody with glioblastoma, usually the time frame is 2 years, but she, you know, lasted a whole four, and we were fighting through it. And so I had a whole bunch of music. And so the weight of Love was just much heavier than Of Time, I think, and it felt more respectful. At the time that she passed, it felt more respectful to make it for her.
Was she aware that you were working on this piece as you were looking after her? Did you talk to her about it?
She was aware of there are some songs that I played for her from my last album Of Power. A lot of the songs weren't really finished before she passed from Of Love. So she wasn't really, I don't know that she, I'm trying to think of it. And some of them were written like for example, there was one song that I wrote a week after she passed away. And that was when I was going on a road trip because I was just so sad. I couldn't be in this house anymore because this is the house that I grew up in. This was her. This is the house she passed away in. This is the house that I now live in, you know. So I just couldn't be here. And so I left. And I was like just kind of crushed. And I was like sitting in my seat as I was on the road and I'm feeling myself being crushed. And then out of the back of my mind, I heard my mom say, "Boy, get your head up. You better get your feet up. What's next?" Because that's her whole vibe was what's next, always, no matter what.
Did you feel a compulsion to write then in that immediacy? Or did you feel like it was just spewing out of you, out of your subconscious? Or was it, what was that feeling of, you know?
I think it was both. Yeah, I think I, like in the car, in order for me to alleviate myself of that crushed feeling just momentarily, I wrote from that perspective of her telling me to, yeah, get up. So I wanted, in the car, my partner Meg was driving. I just wrote the lyrics to the song right there. And I shared them with her, and we had a moment. It was a moment. I used my lyrics to kind of like share and connect with people.
Boy, get your head up. Boy, get your legs up. Hand held tight. By her side, cause she said so. Protected by her might, no, from the get-go, her magic's still in sight.
There was a subconscious thing happening too. Those little prayers, like where the caretaker is talking to the person they cared for, mm-hmm. or me talking to my mom. Those felt very subconscious. That I was just talking, like I was writing. I wrote it down, but it was very stream of consciousness just coming out. And then, of course, having recorded it, I edit it and chop it up and try to make more sense of it.
One thing I've found really poignant as well is that you've got clips of your mum interlaced in between the music. And
yeah.
Were those pieces that you saw, you know, afterwards? Or was that always in your head that you would have her presence, her vocal presence in the tracks?
The awesome thing about her was she was such a, I guess, entrepreneur, but also kind of, she believed in herself deeply. And so she actively, like, she had like a, somebody wanted to make a, like a biography of her or autobiography, whatever. And so she was working with a video person to tell her story about moving from Greece and moving from Poland to America and like all her family. And she won a grant to tell the story of her family. And so she recorded all that stuff. It was all in her music. Her albums are also a testament to those things. There's a song on her album called Like Rocks Over Water, where she's talking about her grief for her mom. So it's like, I'm learning from, I'm like just pretty much imitating her in a way. I cut up her audio from her, I guess, autobiography, and I put it in there, and it became so meaningful that I just wanted to leave it like that. And then I figured, well, what if that's where it was like, oh, what if this is the through line to the album? Her speaking.
Hi, I'm Electra Curtis. I am a violinist and a composer, and I'm Greek.
Folk music is like music that's unpredictable, like having a tree deeply rooted in the ground. So you always go back to the folk music to protect your roots.
Just because also there's something about hearing her speak, because she speaks to exactly my musical beliefs. You know, her existence kind of pushed me forward and held me up, her musical existence. And so it's not just that I'm, you know, using improvisation in a classical setting. It's I'm coming from a tradition of doing that.
Carrying on the torch, yeah.
That's right. And my mom, there's a tradition of this. So she also gives me legitimacy, just internally and externally. And so, and I just want people to hear her voice. You know, I feel like she's such an important...
Yeah.
Like in New York, she was a very, you know, she was a vibrant, important force here, in the, especially in the improvising string community. And so I just needed people to hear her voice.
Because I recently came across an old VHS of an interview that my dad did in like 1980s, and I hadn't seen it. And I hadn't heard my dad's voice since he died. And so that was both really poignant, but also really beautiful to hear him speak and to hear his voice. So I can totally understand that desire of yours to put your mum's voice in there, because it's... It provides comfort as well, doesn't it, to hear their voice after they've gone?
Yeah, very much so. I actually feel really bad because my phone, she would constantly call me and leave me voicemails, like constantly. It wasn't that I was ignoring her. She was just constantly like in a 10 minute, if I didn't answer in 5 minutes, there'd be like five voicemails. But my phone broke and I couldn't retrieve those voicemails after she passed. And that was a really emotional moment for me, because I was like, no, it was like another form of loss, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's something, there's something about the voice, right?
Definitely.
Was your dad a musician as well?
He was. He was a viola player, but he wasn't a professional, but he was in youth choirs, youth orchestras and stuff, and played it. And then was in vocal choirs as well. So yeah, he definitely had a passion for music, but never pursued it professionally. Like your mathematics degree, he went down that avenue and became a computer engineer. So yeah, it's funny how those two sides of the brain are quite interlinked, aren't they? Mathematics and music.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess they must be. Or for some reason, I don't. Yes, they must be. But there's something about the work of both of them that is so, for me, very different.
Yeah.
Like mathematics is extremely, actually is extremely creative. And it's extremely, like when you're proving things, you're trying to use theorems and bending and breaking the logic and the ideas and in various ways, it's extremely in your brain. It's on a piece of paper, written down. And just playing the violin is extremely physical.
Mm-hmm.
And emotional, and writing music, I find to be very emotional. So I find those worlds to be. While I think something about the organizing factor in both math and music, that creative organizing, bending, breaking. What if we try this? This like seeking of possibilities, I think, is the same. There's something about the work that I just remember how stressed I was in college trying to be a math major and a violin major. I was so incredibly stressed.
Do you think your grief affected your playing and your composition? Do you think it was and could that have been subliminal perhaps? Or do you think, or was it something you were conscious of when you were writing and composing these pieces? Was it a different process to the normal procedures you'd gone through from making albums previously?
Oh yeah, very different. I mean, it was similar in the recording aspect, but it was me constantly trying not to escape that sense of grief. Like the process, like when you're grieving, you know, you're feeling this heavy, or you're feeling an emotion, whether it's heaviness, you know, vulnerability, or just being clogged up and really. Kind of not sure what's happening and foggy. There's all these feelings that happened with my grief, at least. And I was attempting to sit in that feeling and just let music come out that was like the soundtrack to that feeling in a way that would felt like appropriate for that moment. Like, as I'm feeling this feeling, this is the music that I would want to kind of represent, not just represent, but to somehow encapsulate that feeling,
because you are your own listener, aren't you, at that point?
Yeah, in a way. But the act, just like that mathematics thing, the action of making the music would inevitably pull me out of that feeling, because there was I have 30 years of experience playing, over 30 years playing the violin. So the second I pick up that violin, I'm triggered back into a whole world of conservatory improv techniques, composition techniques, all these things. And so, and then there's this element of recording. And so that it's almost like an excitement and a one-to-one feeling of, you know, I play the mic, it comes back. It just takes me out of that feeling. Yeah. And so I think at first I was looking to be taken out of that feeling. But then I realized that I think I wanted to sit with that sense of grief, because I felt like that was one way to honor my mom. And also just, from a health perspective, I felt like I didn't want to put that to the side. I wanted to.
Yeah. Did you feel like you were dealing with it in another way, or was this your only avenue for processing the grief?
I don't know. I'm sure I was dealing it. I mean, I was eating really poorly for a while, and, you know, just kind of, there's all these poor ways I was dealing with the grief for sure. Overworking, like I was throwing myself into work and, you know, not really sitting still. But I think this was one of the healthier ways I was dealing with it, for sure.
Yeah. And So when the album is done and you've finished it,
Oh man, massive shower cry. Oh my God. When I realized, when I mean, it was heavy, like listening to Radiohead in the shower, listening to like really depressing Radiohead, like in a dark bathroom, weeping on the floor of my tub. That's what, you know, it was weird. Like, cause I realized, I was like, oh wow, I think the album's done. Like I somehow, you know, cause I didn't know how many tracks I needed, mm-hmm. but I heard it all in a row and I was like, do I need anything else? And I was like, oh, this is done.
An important point, and one that I certainly can relate to. I've similar to you, I've made an album as an ode to my dad, although it's been 15 years rather than 2 years for me. But for whatever reason, I never felt compelled to write anything about him so explicitly. I think I've mentioned it implicitly in a few songs in the past, but for the first time, I decided, a bit like you, I inherited my dad's bungalow house and I cleared it out during the pandemic. And I think that process of clearing out all his stuff really brought it all back to the surface. And so that for me was the trigger to think, actually picking up the guitar, and then suddenly the song came out about that. And I thought, oh yeah, maybe I need to deal with this. Maybe I need to talk about it. But yeah, going back to what you've just said, when I finally had come to the realization, oh yeah, this album is finished now, that it's quite a moment when you think, okay, I've probably said all I need to say. And there's a poignancy in that moment, isn't there, when you're thinking of making something as a marker for your parent who's no longer with you. It's a moment of reflection, isn't it, when you realize that you've completed it.
Yeah, for 100%. I mean, for me, it was very out of my brain. I wasn't thinking. There were no words. I guess it was poignant, but it was more brutal than anything for me. It was just like, because I guess I didn't realize that I was trying to hold on to her through making the album. Yeah. Well, it's funny because I'm now actually writing songs again about just grief and sadness. And I almost feel like, oh, but this is going back to that thing. Like, am I allowed to keep writing about this? It's funny. And I have decided, yes, I'm allowed. But yeah, it was just brutal because, I mean, there's so many ways that, you know, yeah, we subconsciously try to just hold on or, mm-hmm. you know, or push away or whatever it is. And I didn't know in that moment that I was trying to hold on, hold on to her. I mean, because there's so many songs about this apartment, for example. Yeah. Like, there's a, you know, it's about saying hello. Like, this grief, like, every time I walk into the building, there's a sense of remembering, you know, doing that with my mom. Yeah. And she used to sit right at that spot. Hello. You know, she passed away in the room, this other room, and hello. Like, just to say a constant hello to that grief and not try to say, okay, well, that happened then, this is now, I'm not feeling this. You know, yeah. Just to say hello to it.
Hello. Hey, to this heaviness. Hello to this weight. I see you here now. Good in this place. Walk into the building, say hello to the guard. Try to fight this feeling, say hello to that part. Constant hello, never goodbye. As hard as I try, the truth cannot lie. Hello to this heaviness, hello to this weight.
No, that's true. That's true. You know, it's always there. And perhaps it's our willingness to accept its appearances. That's the task, maybe, is not to think that we can overcome it, but to accept it, its place in our life. It's a permanent place in our life, like you say. So have you played this live?
Yeah, actually, the first time I played it live was on that first Mother's Day after she passed. So she passed in September, And there's September to May, you know, 8 months away. So, but that was the first Mother's Day I played it without her, but it was also the first time I played it live. And also it was,
wow,
it was interesting because I thought it was just a concert for, you know, New York people. So I had this whole thing planned out to say, and, you know, thinking I'm would be playing for my, you know, normal music, New York, you know, snobby crowd that don't care about whether you've, they don't care who's died. They want you to play really well. but I walked into the room and it was full of little kids and their mothers and their parents, because it was a morning concert and on a Sunday and on Mother's Day. And so the only people that are coming to that concert are families. And so I had to totally change what I was saying. I had to suddenly I didn't want to damage these people in the audience, these little kids. So it was kind of like a Disney, you know, a Bambi's mother's died type moment that forced me to be bigger than myself. You know, being the school teacher that I was at one point, you know, I was, at one point I was running back and forth between the hospital where my mom was having brain surgery to class. I would teach like 45 minutes and then I'd run back to the hospital, which was 5-9 minutes away, just to make, you know, she'd get out of the surgery. I'd go hang out with her. Then I'd come back, teach the class, be done with school, run back to the hospital. Cause I was her, I'm an only child. So I was the only one. Otherwise it would just be her.
Yeah.
When I was back in the room, I actually back in the classroom, I became a better school teacher because I had to be Mr. Stewart. There's something about, like, just took on that role. And so in that moment for Mother's Day, I kind of went back into that role, which is both good and bad. It felt a little less cathartic.
How did the concert go?
Oh, it went really well. I think people were crying. And
how did you manage to hold up?
I did okay. I think there's something about concert mode Curtis that I kind of turn off a certain, I don't know what happens. I'm very focused on, like, performing.
Yeah. Is that the only time you've performed that piece, or have
no?
You...
I did. I've done it several times. I did it in the school that she used to teach at, the Harlem School of the Arts. I've done it in Chicago for a festival. I just did it at Merkin Hall in New York City for the which is like right around the Lincoln Center from the album release. And people, I mean, it is a requiem. It's kind of like an extended memorial service, honestly. And I actually felt similarly during her memorial service. People were looking at me weird, like, what's wrong with you? Like, it wasn't until after this, because I, you know, when I'm in those scenarios, I'm thinking about all the people in the room. I'm thinking about making sure everybody else has a very meaningful time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the event is done, I was just like, that was another, like, I didn't make it to the shower on that one. it was just a floor cry. But
how have you felt the album has been taken? How's it been received by the avant jazz classical world?
So that concert, I finally went back to that other idea of love, of time. The of love part was still overwhelming in a way. Some people just felt like, oh, that, you know, it's been very cathartic and, you know, passionate, and it's, you know, beautiful to watch this very vulnerable thing. Other people were like, oh, this is not music anymore, or this is extra musical. This is self-referential and not music. So, I don't know. I guess nobody's seen an opera before.
Yeah.
You know, I guess somehow an opera is music, but, you know, even though there's words, all these staging, all that stuff, that is literally extra musical. But it's both. I think grief is tough for people.
Has it been a catharsis for you to put it out there, to perform it, to know that it's out there in the world now?
I think it's both cathartic and it's also like Sisyphusian.
What does that word mean?
Oh, yes, got him. Like Sisyphus, the guy that has to push the boulder up the mountain and then the boulder will also always come back down. The Greek,
okay.
It's that Greek myth. Sorry, this is my Greek side coming up.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. No, he's like, I think Sisyphus, what was it? Punished for something. he did something bad, and so he's been punished, and he has to push this boulder up the mountain, mm-hmm. just to be doomed to, it rolls back down, and he has to keep pushing it back up. That's kind of how I feel with these concerts. Like, not, I don't feel doomed. It's more like I will go through these stages of grief again and again every time I do them. And so including the catharsis afterwards.
Yeah.
And then including the almost like withdrawal after that.
You've created this body of work now that will last, you know, forever. As long as there are humans on this planet listening to music, that piece will exist. And within that piece is your mum. So there's hopefully a feeling inside you that you've, you know, you've laid down a marker there and taken that sadness and created something beautiful out of it.
Yeah, there's definitely, it's there. Man, I thank you for saying that. That helps me to remember that.
I think it's important.
And in fact, somebody at one of the concerts was like, oh, it's almost like you brought her back to life, which was crazy for somebody to say. But I mean, because there's a piece where there's video of her writing with her red, she has this red violin case that I now use. Mm-hmm. And I had the red violin case on the stage, and there was video of her talking, like the piece Embrace from the album has mm-hmm. a whole video element. And you really get a sense for that her spirit is in the room, I guess. That's what people yeah. said. And so.
Is that the piece where she says music is the center of my life? Is that, I
yeah,
remember
that
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Music, right. Music is what kept me going.
Music is something that holds my life together.
No, that was a beautiful piece.
So yes, I do feel that way, but I think, I guess I'm so close to it that I'm still feeling loss.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still in various aspects of just straight loss, and I'm sure that doesn't go away, but it's hard for me to think that, it's hard for me to get out of that.
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, grief ebbs and flows, and yeah, there will be times when it'll be harder than others. But I'm sure knowing that you've created that album will be of comfort for you in the future. Do you mm-hmm. you know, you alluded to the fact that you said that you are still referring to grief in new pieces. So, well, it sounds like creativity is still at the fulcrum of what you do, and. Does it still provide you with the same excitement and joy that it did to that young boy?
Yeah, it sure does. Oh,
who was
forced that's a very that, sweet way of framing that.
that violin into his hands at 3 years old.
Ah, thrusted.
Play this.
That's so sweet, the way you just framed that. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I get really like inventive and fun. I have fun when I'm making music, for sure. So music is definitely really fun. It's fun for me to, you know, try this and try that. Sometimes I get stuck, you know, and that's frustrating. And the more I compose, the more there's a possibility for me to get stuck, because I start to get more critical of the ideas. So what really helps me tap into the emotion and the catharsis, or the, you know, or self-reflection, is writing words. And then pairing those two things together, I think, feels like the healing process. Like, music in itself is like this imaginative playground. I get to just imagine and get excited and get energized. The words help me to feel a meaningful connection to an emotion. And then putting those things together, that's somehow more cathartic, because it's like a meeting of my parts. So yeah, if not, it's kind of like, did you ever see that movie Inside Out?
Oh, my daughters love that. It's one of their favorite.
It's kind
films.
Of like the moment when joy and sadness learn how to work together.
Yeah.
When joy isn't kicking sadness out, that's what, like, when I'm trying to put these words and the music together, that's what that is what that feels like.
Yeah.
It feels how somehow extra musical. Extra like very musical in that way.
Yeah. Well, Curtis, thank you for talking to me, and I wish you all the best with your future endeavors. And yeah, I look forward to perhaps seeing you over here in the UK soon.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope to see you. Thank you.
Take care. Curtis's album, Of Love, is out now. For more information about Curtis and his music, head to his website, curtisjstewart.com. Please help by rating and subscribing to this podcast, as it will help to spread the word about Feels Like Healing. Thanks for listening.